Hi there, I'm Eric Wordweaver-Shervin, Goldie of the Ridgar Folk here in East Texas. I would like to welcome you to The Raven's Call. This is a show where I ramble on about different heathen-related subjects, just kind of whatever strikes my fancy, sets my mind on fire at the time. A big UPG warning at the beginning of this episode, like always. I am not a hardcore recon. I am not a neo-pagan, fluffy bunny, crystal wavy, whatever. I am my own thing. I am an organic, middle-of-the-road heathen who has a tribal-type viewpoint, is inclusive in his heathenry approach, and whose, you know, primary moniker is not my hall, not my call. So, keep that in mind as we go forward. If you're looking for something that's more on the Reconstructionist side, I'm not for you. If you're looking for something that's more along the, you know, way out there, esoteric, whatever, I may not be for you. I may be in some points. It depends. Depends on which aspects of it you like, because I am more middle of the road on things. If you're one of those that thinks that heathenry is only for those of European ancestry or those that are white or whatever, I am definitely not for you. So just keep that in mind as we go forward. I got my last video that I put out last week was tips and tricks for newbie heathens, heathenry FAQ for newbies. And that was an interesting, sorry, this chair is sinking in the sand and it's driving me nuts. Anyway, there we go. For a moment anyway, until it sinks again. That video was interesting. It took off like gangbusters. It definitely reached its peak activity relatively quickly, which was surprising, given that, you know, my last couple of videos had performed somewhat poorly. And I guess it's just it hit the right, you know, clickbait buzz terms in the title this go around. And then it got like three thumbs down within the first hour of it being out, which is probably the fastest I've ever gotten three thumbs down on a video. It tripped me out. It was very apparently polarizing. Well, not very polarizing. Most people enjoyed it. But at least it was somewhat polarizing. And that was fun. But so today we're going to venture into another viewer request subject. Now, this one is from a gentleman named Joshua who wrote into the group and asked some very specific questions. And, he had asked, he's got more of an Anglo-Saxon bent on his heathenry, which typically when I'm talking to people who are of an Anglo-Saxon bent, they tend to be more on the hardcore Reconstructionist side, which is fine. I have no ill will towards Reconstructionists, none. I have mad respect, not a problem. It's just not my approach, that's all. So, cool, absolutely fantastic, cool. I am not a Reconstructionist, so I can't necessarily answer things from a Reconstructionist standpoint. He didn't say that he's a Reconstructionist in his question, but he did hint at the whole Anglo-Saxon side of things, which tends to lend itself more to more Reconstructionist approaches. So I'm going to give you my answer in the way that I've got it, but there are other avenues where if you want a more Reconstructionist approach, I recommend seeking out someone who is more of a Reconstructionist bent themselves. Now, I find that a number of, especially within the Anglo-Saxon side of things, a number of Thadesmen tend to be more on the Reconstructionist side of things. Thaed is spelled T-H-E-O-D. Thaed is where you'll see it. It's usually pronounced Thaed or Thaed. Most of the time it's Thaed or Thaedism is the name of the approach. And Thaed effectively translates to folk. It just means a people. And it is basically this approach that is, it's not even necessarily Anglo-Saxon in approach, but I find a number of Anglo-Saxons find a home within Thaedism. Actually, the buddy I have that's a Thaedist, a Thaedsman, is on the more Bronze Age Scandinavia, like pre-migration period kind of stuff. So it's fascinating. I don't even fully understand it all because I'm not a Thaedsman, so I don't approach things from a Thaedish standpoint. But if you know some Thaeds out there, you may reach out to them and be able to get some more Anglo-Saxon-oriented Reconstructionist approaches to things. I know one of the things that I am recommended frequently by Anglo-Saxon Reconstructionists with regards to Sumble particularly is the book, The Lady with the Mead Cup. And that is, I don't have the author in front of me, or I would give that to you right now. But the gist of it is that it's a good academic researching of the Anglo-Saxon approach to the toasting ritual, and that that's one of the ones that fleshes it out in such a way that you realize the three rounds shared horn that we're used to in the modern era is not necessarily the historically accurate version. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean that it's ineffective. It simply means that it may not be the historically accurate version. Based on what I have heard amongst the historically accurate version and otherwise, I actually prefer the three-round deal that we have. Design-wise, I feel like I'm better served by it. But anyway, make of that what you will. If you are interested in hearing more about Thaetism, seek out a Thaetsman. I have one who keeps talking about coming on the channel and doing an interview with me to, you know, be a part of the channel and talk more online about, you know, his approach to things. But nailing him down has been extremely difficult because we both have stupid schedules. And so we'll see. I'm going to try and get him on here at some point in time. And I believe his intent was to speak more on the Reconstructionist viewpoint. As opposed to Thaetism itself. It's hard to say. Thaetism doesn't exactly go out and recruit individuals. People discover Thaetism and then want to be part of it. Kind of like heathenry in general. So like I said, make of that what you will. But in answer to your question about specifically, his question specifically, as I've rambled on for 10 minutes now, is what about individual rituals, like on a hearth basis. How do I do a ritual by myself? How do I do bloat? How do I do sumble if I don't have a group, if I don't have a thade, if I don't have a tribe, if I don't have a kindred? How do I go about doing ritual solo? So it's actually a pretty... Okay, I have to do this question in two phases, okay? Because specifically what Joshua asked was about bloat and sumble and how to do those solo without a group, without a tribe. In general, I'm going to approach ritual as a, you know, as a whole from an individual standpoint, but more from a mechanics standpoint. The first thing I want to tackle, though, is how do I do sumble solo? You can't. Sorry. I have done a lot of ritual design, a lot of metaphysical discussionary stuff, talked to a lot of individuals over the years, played with different formulas and theology and just everything behind it. And I can tell you flat out, Sumble's not one you can do by yourself. Sumble's not designed to be done by itself. Sumble is a communal ritual. You can't have a community ritual without a community. So you're not going to be able to do that one in particular. But that's okay. Because as a solo practitioner, if you're looking to try and do Sumble without a group of people, then you're missing the why on why we do the ritual. And so this is a great opportunity to come in and say, hey, let's re-explore this why real quick, okay? So the why we do Sumble. We do Sumble specifically because we are enjoining the weird of a group, and we are sharing weird in a ritualized format to create a bond and a tie amongst people in such a way that it creates this anchor point in history. We put everything into the well together, and then we commingle our energies and give gifts to the gods, the ancestors, and our folk as a way of, you know, communing. And that is very specifically about the folk. We do, and when I say the folk, I mean your tribe, your Innengarth, your immediate inner circle, your outer circle, but those people that are there in your life that are tied, your guests, people that you see face to face. These are the people that you have Sumble with. not randos, not people that have no business knowing what you're about, not people that you, like, I would never have stumble at a meetup because I'm not going to share that kind of weird with people that I don't know. So the essence of stumble is to indeed share that weird, to have that interaction of luck. So we all come away stronger and better for it in the end. As such, that's not really a ritual that you can do solo. It's not a ritual you should want to do solo because then basically you're just drinking by yourself, which is fine. You can drink by yourself, but there's no reason to, you know, ritualize it. Just have a drink. It's fine. There are other things that you can do as far as a Sumble-like ritual on a hearth cult level. You know, you can perfectly well sit out and hail your ancestors and drink toasts to them and tell stories of them, but you're not mixing weird with anyone else. It's not necessarily a ritualized format unless you make a ritual out of it, but at that point you're communing with those spirits. And most frequently that gets into our second category here, which is bloat. So let's talk about bloat as it pertains to solo practice. Now, bloat itself as a functionality, whether you're doing it as a lifeblood sacrifice or if you're using a stand-in symbolic sacrifice, or if you are it's a real sacrifice. It's not a symbolic sacrifice, but you're just not using blood. You may be using mead. You may be using ale, wine, something of a libation type approach. You may be using food. You may be using things that you've crafted, things that you've written. There's any myriad number of things that you can sacrifice in a ritual bloat. Some people will only reserve the term bloat for blood sacrifice. I am not one of those. So if I say bloat, know that I'm talking about sacrifice in general, not just blood sacrifice. I also will sometimes use the term feigning, which does come from an Anglo-Saxon root to mean, that means to celebrate functionally. And that's effectively what you're doing, is celebrating this sacrifice, this relationship with these particular powers that be with whom you are interacting. Now, the why on bloat is that you wish to give gift, you wish to give offering to a specific power, be that the ancestors, be that the spirits of the realm, be that the gods and goddesses on high. The essence of bloat is that you are giving offering to them in hopes that they will repay that offering with a blessing of luck. So that's why we do that. We do that to build relationship with the unseen forces. We do that to exchange energies and luck. We give a piece of our luck to them, and then they grant us with luck in return. And we hope that the luck that we gain from them is enough to bolster us so that we may go forward and do even better than we were doing before, so that we can bring that luck to bear and turn it towards good things for ourselves and our people. So this is definitely something that you can do by yourself. You don't necessarily have to have a group. Now, I find that ritual in and of itself is more effective in a group. I think that as far as garnering the attention of the gods and goddesses as a whole, a tribal level interaction garners more attention than an individual one. But these are the gods, and their power is beyond our understanding. So it is entirely possible for an individual to gain the sight, the attention of the gods, at least in my view it is, and to be able to give them offering and ask for a blessing in return. I feel this way because I feel like I've done it myself in the past and had decent results. I was a solo practitioner for a long time before I built my tribe and developed everything into what it is now. So for a very long time, I was doing solo work, or doing at least hearth cult work. And so I've got some fairly interesting experiences from all of that, and can tell you, yes, solo work can be extremely effective as long as you are paying attention to why you're doing what you're doing and making sure that you are actually doing what you intend to do mechanically, metaphysically. Sometimes it takes some thinking things out and re-examining your modus operandi, your approach to the ritual, because you may think that you're having an effect only to find out you're not. So when it comes to bloat, when it comes to feigning, when it comes to sacrifice, the basic mechanics are the same, especially for a solo practitioner as it is for a group. When you're in a group, of course, you're going to involve some extra things, like probably a bloat bowl and bloat tame, which is simply, I don't have an, all the evergreens on my property, I don't have one right behind me. Oh well. Usually it's an evergreen sprig, pine needles, or I use cedar more frequently than anything else for various reasons. And you will use that by dipping the cedar, or the tine, the usually it's needles of some kind, because it gives a good whisking. It'll catch that liquid and allow you to whisk it out as a blessing. Far more effective than, say, a leaf, which is more likely just to make a mess and not necessarily going to direct the blessing in the way that you would want to. I like a good brushwood. So, you do a bloat tan, a bloat bowl of some kind. You would make your offering to the gods and goddesses, and then you would have a fluid in the bowl, be that blood from a blood sacrifice or mead or wine or ale or whatever, in the bowl, and then you would ask the gods and goddesses to bless this mead, this blood, this whatever that you're going to use to impart the blessing upon the people. And then it becomes a conduit for that energy. And so you would then, you know, dip the tane in the liquid or whatever, and then sprinkle it upon the gathered people. Well, obviously in a group setting, that's great. But on a solo practitioner side of things, it's excessive and doesn't really serve any purpose. The why isn't there. The why for it in a group setting is that you need to impart this blessing onto a gathered group, and that is one of the most effective ways to do it. Now, as far as imparting a blessing upon oneself in ritual, usually I hand the bowl and the tane off to one of my other tribe members and ask them to bless me as I have blessed them with the blessing bowl. In a solo practitioner thing, can't really do that. It doesn't work that way. In a small hearth, you can. You know, if it's, you know, two partners, you can bless them, they can bless you, everything's cool and groovy. Or if you got the kids, you can get them involved doing the same kind of thing. Parents can bless the kids can bless the parents, and it's really kind of groovy that way. It's kind of neat. But from an individual standpoint, that doesn't really work. I mean, unless you're going to like spray it up in the air and try to catch it on your face or something. Kind of silly. But you can go about it a different way. Like, instead of doing a bloat bowl and bloat tane type situation, you may put the offering that is intended to be the conduit for the blessing back to you in, say, a stein, a mug, a horn, something from which you can drink. And then you literally take that blessing into yourself through the drink. Now, I wouldn't drink all of it, obviously. You take the blessing, maybe sprinkle some on your housewide altar, maybe your ancestors' altar, to spread the love of the gods to these individual entities, unless either one of these are to whom you are bloating, at which point you would not necessarily want to do it that way. You would more appropriately bless other things with it, like the house, the threshold, things like that. And then I would take out what was left in the end and return it to the earth outside, usually at what I've designated as the Bärenstock, or the kind of child tree that is tied to the family in that location. It's just kind of a common receptacle for offerings for me. It's kind of an agreed upon place to go to. And so I will go out and I'll return what's left of the libation to the earth outside. And that seems to work fairly well. When the offering is well thought out and is framed appropriately, and I feel like I've garnered enough of the gods' attention to have that exchange of energies take place, I find that as a solo practitioner, that particular approach to the ritual works very well. And so I did that for years. I did that for ages until I started to build my own tribe and had the luxury of being able to do tribal level rituals, which I still handle very differently from my rituals in home. Because sometimes I'm making an offering, but I'm not necessarily asking for the common exchange like we would in a bloat. Sometimes I'm simply just putting out an offering for my husfetier, my housewife, and I am just giving them something, saying, here, this is for you. Thank you for everything. Appreciate it all. And that seems to be well received. Just freely giving gift to say thank you, that kind of thing. And with the ancestors, same kind of thing. I'll put an offering out, and then when it's done, I'll return that to the earth. So, you know, from a solo practitioner standpoint, the mechanics of the ritual are really not all that different. But it works for bloat specifically because it is not a it is not necessarily a communal ritual. It can be a communal ritual, but for the most part, it's a direct connection kind of ritual between the gods and goddesses and ourselves, as opposed to Sumbul, which is a communal ritual of tying together the gathered community and meshing all of their weird together in that moment. So there you have that. So building upon this, you know, you look at this and you see, okay, there is an approach to bloat that pays attention to the why on bloat, and there is functionality there on an individual basis. Then the question becomes more along the lines of, do you make enough of a splash, enough of a scene for the gods and goddesses to take attention to you? Do they turn their gaze upon you? If they do not, then you know you may want to refine your methodology a little bit. Or it may be something that you're trying it at the wrong time of year, you're going about something a little off kilter. It's a great way to explore and experiment with your rituals and to really craft and hone the ability to make that connection with the gods and goddesses, which then you can bring to bear in a group ritual setting when you actually do get to engage in that, provided that you do someday. So we have an approach to bloat that works from an individual basis. Is it better to do it as a tribe, as a group? Yes, of course. It's definitely better because you're talking about tribal level interactions then. You're talking about a tribe's worth of offering to the gods and goddesses versus a hearth's level of offering to the gods and goddesses. But it's still effective. There's still nothing wrong with it. Do not feel like you have to go out and have a group in order to make an offering to Olden or Frigg. Just do it. Do it from your hearth, do it from your home, and see how the effects are. Trust me, it's better to do that than nothing at all. So where do we go from there? Where do we go as far as ritual from an individual basis? If we've already explored bloat and it works okay individually, and Sumbul does not work at all. Well, we look at things a little bit differently if we want to do some of the hearth cult rituals that then grow up. Now, hearth cult, I literally mean hearth culture, or the religious practices cult of a specific group, the hearth. And so the hearth cult is the specific ritualistic practices of that hearth and home. Now, from this standpoint, your cultic practices are your own, and no one can tell you whether they're right or they're wrong. The only thing that you can judge whether they are right or wrong, need tweaking, whatever, is the results that you have after doing the ritual and observing whether or not the ritual was accepted, honored, etc., etc. That's how you approach that. Now, different kind of rituals that you can do that may be similar to Sumbul, but are not Sumbul, specifically because Sumbul is about the intermingling of the weird of the folk that are gathered. You can still do toasting rituals to the ancestors and to the gods and goddesses. You simply step out, set aside a time, put yourself in that frame of mind, lift a drink on high, hail them, give them a toast, tell them thank you, sing their praises, and then drink. And then maybe pour a little out as a sign of offering, and then continue on for as long as you want. This is reflected in the memory horn, which the memory horn is, again, a communal ritual wherein a number of individuals will drink a horn of ale or mead or whatever in remembrance of a fallen individual, someone who has died. They will drink to their memory and tell great stories, etc., etc., etc. This is a kind of offshoot of Sumbul. It is not truly Sumbul, but it might as well be in a lot of ways. It's like a Sumbul that's specifically dedicated to a single person and everybody's on the same page. So extrapolating from that, how to work that ritual basis, what actually is occurring there, where the exchanges are taking place as far as luck and weird goes, you can extrapolate that into other individual practices within the home, such as stepping out and giving, you know, a toast to the ancestors and then drinking one in their honor, pouring out a little bit, or setting a beer up on the ancestor altar and then drinking one as a sharing of a drink with the ancestors, and then trying to utilize that moment to build that connection And so I really see a connection there, a parallel in a lot of ways to what we would see as sambal, but not a sambal. You are communing and it is toasting, but it's not truly sambal. And it is not a communal practice, because the why on sambal, keep in mind, is to mingle the weird and luck of the group. Whereas this one, you're specifically trying to honor a specific individual or a specific power that may be. So keep that in mind. That's an avenue that you can go. Other avenues, you know, you can do an offering to the gods and goddesses and then use that. You can go ahead and catch it in a blow-up bowl and do the tame thing, and you can bless your ancestors' altar with it. You can bless your Husvatera altar with it. You can bless your house, your threshold, your front door, all of that. Your forge, if you're a forger, you can do any of your other crafting tools, harvesting tools, hunting tools, whatever it may be, that is something specific to you and that you would like the blessing of the gods imparted upon. That's an opportune time to do it, and something that you can do within the hearth cult of the home without necessarily having to do it on a grand scale. Mosquito. Dead mosquito. So, yes. Rituals can be done on an individual basis. These are just a couple of ideas. Bloat, yes. Sambal, no. Alternative rituals by personal design, yes, of course. Keep in mind, there's nobody can tell you you're doing it wrong on those particular rituals, because you're designing them for yourself and your own hearth cult. And the only expert on your hearth cult is your hearth. That's it. Nobody else gets to have a say on how you and your hearth worship the gods and goddesses. If they want to, they can take a hike, flying leap. Bye-bye. Deal with it, because that's not what it's about. Tribal level, yeah, we can have a conversation, but what I do on my hearth, that's between me and my Innengarth. On with you. So, with that, in summation, yes, individualized practice of solo practitioners, individual ritual within hearth cult, absolutely a thing. So explore, experiment, try out a couple of different approaches, try out different offerings and different styles of offerings. See if there's a place of power on your property or in your house where things just seem to connect better. Practice with your ritual space and just get a general feel for it. But for the most part, do something. You're better off doing something and failing than not doing anything at all. It's better to have tried and failed than to not have tried at all. So keep that in mind as you go forward. Build something special for you and yours. To all of you solo practitioners out there, I'm sure you've got tons of tips and tricks you'd be willing to share with newbies and whatnot. Jump up on the group page for Word Weaver Productions community and share some of that. Let people see how you go about doing ritual on an individual basis, and they can see the myriad ways that different hearths can go about it, and then feel better about their own individual practices, because they should. They should feel better about the way they do things, because it's their approach, and that's perfectly fine. So, to all of you out there, hail to you. May your hearth fires burn bright.